Liveline on RT Radio 1 with the all-new Kia Sportage, built for endless inspiration. The all-new Sportage, now at your local Kia dealer.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Joe at RT.ie. Dear Mr. Duffy, my name is Sean Agbobo. I am writing to inform you that I and my siblings will never return to that house in Talla after the horrible near-death experience we had on the 12th of January last. We were lucky to have escaped death. My dad or any of my siblings would have been killed, thanks to the God we serve. The council have ordered us to return to the house tomorrow, the 25th of January. We want you to know that we will not go back. We choose to remain on the street and return to that house. It looks like the only way you can solve a problem is when someone is dead. My siblings and I will not be part of that history. If it was my parents that did something bad to us, you would have been so quick to take the children into custody and call it child abuse. The Irish state would. But for 12 days you abandoned and allowed us to suffer on the street, yet no one can challenge you. The question I'm asking everyone is, what kind of abuse is this? Different rule for different people. What a society of injustice and imbalance. And that's signed David, Sean, Jane and Joanne Agbobo. And Sean, who's 17, is on the line. Sean, good afternoon, Sean. Tell us what happened 13 days ago.
I'm 16, not 17.
Oh, good man. Okay.
Yeah. So on the 12th of January, our house was attacked by eight men with knives, and we were just upstairs, me and my brother, in our room, finishing some homework and projects.
Yeah.
And we heard an aggressive knock, and we started going down, and we heard our dad shouting. So we start running down, me and my brother.
Okay.
And we just go down and help my dad push the door. Okay. And he was shouting for help and nobody was coming. And we were pushing the door for what felt like hours.
Okay.
And eventually when the door was about to break, because they were pushing the door from the other side and sticking a knife through the gap at my dad, when the door was about to break, they ran away by some miracle. And the Garda came about 20 minutes later or so.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that the house was safe enough to stay in, despite the fact the door was kicked in and the window was broken.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to sleep in the house that night, but none of us got much sleep. I didn't sleep at all. And my sisters couldn't sleep. They went to my dad's room. And my brother didn't get much sleep either.
When these men, Sean, were attacking your house, you reckon there was eight of them. Were they saying anything? Were they shouting anything?
Yes. They were shouting the name of someone who I probably shouldn't be mentioning.
Okay, well, don't. Yeah. And has the house been attacked before, Sean?
Yes, numerous occasions.
And tell me about some of them, if you can, please.
It's been robbed. We've had our car smashed. My dad's car last July or so was burnt. Mm-hmm. And we've also had racial slurs graffitied on the wall.
Mm-hmm. And they are clearly racial slurs?
Yes.
Okay. And you reckon it's the same people doing this all the time, Sean?
Yeah.
And the previous attacks of your father's car being burnt out, racial slogans on the wall, multiple times, your house broken into, and the window smashed. Do you reckon it's? Do you believe it's the same group on each occasion, Sean?
Yes.
Okay. And what do the Gardaí say? Is there CCTV or any way you can identify these people?
There is CCTV, but I don't think we've acquired the footage at the moment.
Okay. Now, you decided on January 12th that this was the last straw. You were not going to go back. Why did you decide? Yeah. Why did you decide to leave the house once and for all in Tala?
Because just too many attacks. Like for about when we first moved to the house, we used to play outside almost every day, and we've been in that house for about 8 years.
Okay.
So coming on to about five or six years now, we haven't gone outside at all. Like my sisters have felt intimidated. I've felt intimidated at times, and it's just not a good environment.
And how do you manage? And well, there's four, and the four of you are quite young, 17, 16, 17 is David, you're 16, 12, Jane, and Joanne is also 12. What about school?
What about school? What?
And do you go to school? You do, and how do you get on there? I presume there's no racial attacks at school.
No racial attacks, but at the moment I'm just acting like nothing's wrong. But it's just hard to focus, and it's just I'm just zoning out a lot.
And Sean, where are you living now?
We're living out of our church at the moment.
Because your father is a pastor in a local church, and you're living in the church.
Yeah.
And have you had any offers from the council?
No, they've abandoned us.
But you've been in that house for 8 years.
Yes.
Have you ever left it before in these circumstances, during all the previous attacks? Okay.
No.
But you're Adam. This one is just a step too far. You believe you could have been killed.
Yes.
And your family.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you say one of them was sticking a knife through the open door, was he trying to stab your dad?
Yes, he was trying to get him in the head, yeah.
God. And the Gardaí are saying, and by the way, the Gardaí confirmed this attack, by the way, but the Gardaí are saying, you believe, now it's not up to the Gardaí totally, but you believe the Gardaí thought it was safe to go back into the house, but...
Yeah.
Now, are other people, I know you're Irish, but I know your family originally from Nigeria, like so many in this country, and very welcome and very much a part of the life of the country. You're as much an Irish citizen as I am, Sean. But are there other people of colour in the community that are being attacked as well?
There are no other people of colour.
You're the only ones, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And do you think they're locals? Did you recognise any of them? You say they were all men, 8 of them, 12th of January last, attacked your house, kicked down the door, broke windows, but this wasn't a forced attack. Have you seen any of these men as you go around your daily life, Sean?
The ones that attacked your house, no, because they're wearing balaclavas and ski masks. They're covering their faces.
My God. And were they shouting, "We want you out"?
They were shouting, as I said, someone's name that I don't want to mention.
Okay. The stress on you, I can understand, on the four children. Emmanuel is your dad, Emmanuel Aibobo. Emmanuel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm so sorry that this has happened to you and your family. Emmanuel, tell us what happened on the 12th of January again, please. You were at the door.
Yeah, on the 12th of January, usually I start my Bible study online at from 9 p.m. So I just got upstairs to get my iPad and my Bible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And while I was coming down the staircase, I saw a young man on the door. And so I was knocking. Sometimes it could be, we have a knock like that. It could be some delivery people looking for address or something like that.
Yeah.
So I decided to open, you know, but thank be to God that the guy was impatient. He didn't allow me to open completely.
Okay.
So the moment I'd opened a little bit, the next thing I saw on my head was a knife. It was just coming straight, and I had to dodge and try to close the door back. I didn't know about seven other guys had taken position within the premises. And so this guy came and put their hands on the door, and they were pushing and pushing. I was screaming, "Help, somebody help, somebody help." Mm. Nobody was coming. I think my son Sean and Dave heard my screaming in the room, and the twin girls, Jane and Joanne, and David came and put their hands on the door, and Sean, and were pushing, bringing all manners of pulling the sofas, everything at the door we can see to reach the door, and were pushing. They were throwing their knives. The girls mm-hmm. were calling the guards. They were screaming, vomiting, and all kinds of talks were happening in the house. And this took place for more than 20, 25 minutes. And they were using all manners of weapons to hit the door. All the hinges of the door, holding the door, and I sent you some of the pictures, had fallen off. And just maybe one or two kicks, the door would have come down. And suddenly, I don't know what happened, they left. And 20 minutes after this incident, or 20, 25 minutes, the guard came. They checked the door, checked everything. Mm-hmm. And they said they were going to patrol the pacifiers. Okay. Because I really wanted us to leave that night, because I didn't know if they were going to come back.
Okay.
So they encouraged us to stay, and they were going to patrol that street all through the night. And that did. My kids couldn't sleep. The girls had to move to my room. Yeah. The boys were awake all through the night. They were traumatized. You know, sometimes even when the girls tried to get asleep, suddenly just didn't jump up from the bed, you know, just like something playing in their brain, because they were watching from the door. They heard
and, do you believe, Manuel, that the attacks are racist? It's about the color of your skin.
Yes, I believe they don't want us there, because just like my son said, they usually come and write a racial slur on the wall.
Yeah.
Say, like I said, I don't want to mention this. They say, we don't want you here. You get out of this place and all of that. You know, and
So when they get into
their house.
And then the previous attacks, when your car was burnt out, when your house was broken into, Do you believe it's the same group doing this?
Yeah, it's the same group that are doing it.
And why did you decide to leave the family home that night, Manuel?
Because, you see, I believe that when there is a case or when there's a problem, we need to respond, not react. One of the things I see most situations here, last week we lost a beautiful soul in this country, which I don't, for privacy and respect for the family, I don't want to mention. And the whole country were mourning and crying, and people were saying, we're going to do something to protect, you know, mm-hmm. this kind of a thing from happening. Now, the question I ask is, must somebody die before an action is taken? More than 8 incidents have taken place in that house. Okay. 8 incidents have taken place
and
in
you're
that
house. You're living now in the church.
What facilities
are in the church for you and your three girls and your two boys? No, your two girls and your two boys. What facilities are in the church?
There's no facility other than just my office there. We sleep. We go out to neighbor's house, wash our clothes, sometimes take shower, and come back there and sleep. Because when the council came in on Friday, this incident happened on Thursday, they came in on Friday, they said to us, the house is not safe to leave. And they sealed the house without providing an option. I asked them, where are we going? You're moving us out of the house. You're asking us to leave the house. You're not providing anything for us to leave. And they said they will get back to us.
Okay.
I kept calling the council, and they said the police report is not out. For 10 days, we were on the street with no support, no help, no accommodation, nothing.
And I go back to Sean, your son. Sean, how are you managing school if you're living in the premises, which is not a house by any stretch of the imagination in terms of facilities? Sean, how are you managing school?
Not very well. I've been falling behind on projects and work that I have to be doing.
And how is your brother and your two sisters?
My brother as well is trying to now catch up on his work.
Yeah.
And my sisters are the same. They're not focusing well.
And Sean, did you get all your belongings out of the house? Your school books, your clothes, your computer, your laptop, your video, whatever. Did you get all?
Not all of them.
No. And who is the house locked up at the moment?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And it's safe inside in terms of your belongings.
We hope.
You said as well in a note you sent us, I've been asking myself, am I really Irish? Sometimes I feel like my passport is a travel document. Why do you say that, Sean?
because sometimes the people around us, the people around us, make us feel unwanted, like we're outsiders, outcasts, and that we're just a disease.
My God. And is there any, have you been in contact with any of the organisations that deal with racism in Ireland to try and tackle it head on?
No.
No.
Okay. I tried to get up, sorry.
Emmanuel, yes, sorry, you want to come in there,
Yeah, I got across with Immigrant Council.
Okay, very good.
About 2 days ago.
Okay.
And they said they were going to get across to me, and I didn't hear from them. I sent a couple of mails to other organizations that I know.
Mm-hmm.
Some have been calling, some have been, even the Tulsa people in charge of child welfare. They visited the church, they brought some food for us, they told us they were going to do something, but that was the last we heard from them. They never showed up anymore. It's only Sean.
Do they know, do the various organizations, including the council, and the Immigrant Council, do they know that you're living in the church? Do they know the address of the church?
Yes, they know them. Even the guardian had come to the church on Tuesday, no, on the 17th, because I had some medical, you know, issues and all that, which does not really require much stress. And because of the stress I had went through for the first 4 days, I collapsed in the church.
Okay.
They had to call the paramedics. And they came to the church and they saw my condition, and the guardian came to the church. They saw the situation, leaving the woman from Tulsa, which I don't want to mention her name on this platform, also came to the church and saw the condition we're living. And nothing, we were on the floor, lying on the floor for 4 days. It was only Sean's crew that assisted us with mattress and gave the students, gave them clothes, the clothes they are wearing. Because when the council came, they gave us less than 45 minutes to leave the house. It was like a war. We want you out. Before we knew what was happening, the van was already outside with their material to seal the house. We didn't take anything out. What the guys are using was given to them by the school. The school has been so supportive, you know, in terms of everything. No support from the council, no support from even Tulsa. You know, nobody.
Okay, but you're saying the school is very good. Sean, how are your two sisters, Sean?
They're still traumatized.
Okay. And are they going to school? Are they managing to go to school?
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not. Are there washing facilities in the church? Is there a shower in the? Is there any facilities like that in the church, Sean?
No shower.
No. Okay, okay.
What they do, sometimes we go out somewhere to have now, a shower.
Okay, Emmanuel, after two, well, it's 12 days, after 2 weeks, is there any way you would go back to the house that you were?
No. I'd rather go back to where I came from than to go back. Because I was lucky to have escaped death. And I don't want to be on the headline. You know, this is something that can be prevented. And if they have, like I said, if I was dead, they would have changed that house for my family. That is 100% assurance. If I was dead, they would have done that. But now I'm happy to be alive. And they don't want to take action until someone is dead.
And Manuel, how long are you in Ireland from Nigeria?
I've been here since 2009, but officially my children have been here since 2004.
And when you say your church, what religion are you, can I ask, Manuel?
I'm a Christian.
A Christian, okay. Well, as you know, Christians are persecuted in Nigeria. But
I know,
which is horrific. But you don't think it's you're not being persecuted here because of your religion?
No, I'm not being persecuted because of my religion. But
you believe it's because of your color?
I believe that.
Okay. Okay. Now the main thing is if the council or Tulsa or any the Immigrant Council. They know the church that you're living in at the minute, so they can contact. Well, they can contact you with your permission through us as well. Sean, I want to answer this. Sean, yourself and your three siblings, you're adamant you're not going back to that house.
Yeah, no, not under any circumstance.
even if the council gave you a guarantee they put up stronger doors, or
no,
the Gardaí
no.
gave you guarantee that
they, no.
they okay. Well, I'm so sorry this has happened to you, Sean, and indeed your family. And Sean, how are you feeling today? 2 weeks. What are you thinking in your head now?
Just a lot of stress.
Yeah. And what question have you been asking yourself?
Yeah, just how could things, like, since 2 weeks, nothing's really gone better, so it just kept going down and down.
Yeah. And have you good friends in school and good teachers, it sounds like?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, stay with your friends and your family, Sean. I know you will, and thanks for contacting us. And as I say, we have all your details, and we'll give them, with your permission beforehand, to any organisation that wishes to try to help. That's Sean and Emmanuel Agbobo. Joe@rte.ie.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Discover our 2-to-1 offers at your local Kia dealer. For more, log on to kia.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, as you probably heard yesterday, the marine biologist who contacted Sean O'Callaghan, very worried about these Russian war games in the next week or so off the coast of Cork and Kerry, and the damage that it will do to marine life. And Johnny Woodlock has contacted us from the Irish Seal Sanctuary. Johnny, you say there is an agreement from the 7th of June 1991, which is, what, 31 years ago. Tell us about that agreement, Johnny, and the waters of Ireland.
The Irish economic zone out to 200 miles.
Yeah.
Charles Haughey declared it a whale and dolphin sanctuary in 1991.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was after a fair bit of lobbying by the newly formed Irish Whale and Dolphin Group. I'm not sure if your man yesterday mentioned them. But that was set up in December 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the whales he was talking about in particular, the beaked whales, there have been a number of times that we've had clusters wash in.
Okay.
And the late Don Cotton did great work. I'm thinking specifically of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
There were a spate of dead beaked whales came in. Now, the beaked whales live very deep in the ocean. And the damage that the sonar and such can cause, I think, is best summed up. Heathcote Williams, the poet, wrote a thing about it, and he said that whales live in an acoustic world. Because these beaked whales, yeah, and most whales don't rely on their eyesight at all. It's sonar, their own sonar, that they rely on, you know.
Okay, because it's in complete darkness.
It's in complete darkness where the beaked whales are.
Yeah, it's hard for
they
us
live,
to understand.
They live in the chasms at the edge of the continental shelf,
wow,
basically, and we know very little about them, about their biology. Some are only known from a couple of records, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're still learning more and more about the sea. Now, in the seal sanctuary, we talk to a lot of, we do a lot of school talks and walks with mentally disabled groups as well. We call it Selkie Trails. But there's an interesting thing I say to them, which is, I ask the kids, how many people have walked on the moon? And can you answer that, Joe?
How many people have walked on the moon? About 12, is it, at this stage?
12 have walked on the moon. Do you know how many people have been to the bottom of the sea?
Zero.
4.
Okay.
In total have been to the bottom of the deepest part of the sea, which is in the Marianas Trench.
Just incredible. It's even hard to comprehend. So what damage do you think the Russian war games, which the Russian ambassador poo-pooed, it's not an issue, you're exaggerating. Well,
the area they're discussing is just 40 miles from the edge of our whale and dolphin sanctuary. There will be a lot of casualties from this. Now, I keep a database of dead seals washed in around the coastline.
Okay.
And we know that marine mammals that die any distance out at sea very few of them actually will wash in as bodies because every scavenger in the ocean will have a go at it before it gets in, you know.
Have you been aware of any war games before in that territory?
There has been. As I said, Don Cotton did a fair bit of research in this in 2018. And when the British Navy, the Royal Navy, admit that they have had war games, there have consequently or subsequently been plenty of bodies washed in dead, you know.
But do you think Vladimir Putin is worried about a few dead seals?
Well, it's whales in particular are the problem, but
and very rare.
Not at all. I mean, it could be. You just don't know what's going on.
And Johnny, could it be, given the description you give of this, the bottom of the earth, about many 20,000 leagues under the sea or whatever, 80,000, but do you think there's species down there that we are unaware of?
Every time a submersible, and there's not that many, can go down very deep, but any time a submersible goes down below 1,000 feet, they're discovering new species all the time. You know, so we don't know what's down there yet. I mean, there's been new species of whale discovered in the last few months. Even there's a type of beaked whale we get in Ireland called a true's beaked whale, and they recently discovered that the true's beaked whale in the southern oceans around New Zealand is actually a different species.
Okay,
and that's a whale, possibly 20 foot long, and it's a new species. A new big whale off Japan.
Our territorial waters are 12 miles, obviously.
They're our exclusive zone.
But the exclusive economic zone can be up to 200
The economic
miles,
zone is out to 200 miles,
320 kilometres. So they're well within the exclusive economic zone, but they're not breaking any international laws.
They're not breaking international law because they're beyond 200 miles there. 240 is the figure I heard. And under the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, they have every right to be there.
But have they every right to destroy marine life in a war game?
Well, I mean, the thing that seems to have slipped under the net is that Irish waters, out to 200 miles, are a whale and dolphin sanctuary.
But says who?
Well, it was a Taoiseach declaration by Charles J. Haughey.
But is it enshrined or recognised by any... by the UN or...
Easy call for Charlie to make because whales and dolphins are protected under national law. They're protected species.
Under international law,
Well, under Irish law as well and EU law. All marine mammals are.
Okay, stay with us, John. It's an angle. I don't know whether that angle was put to the Russian ambassador, but I heard a bit of his press conference. But given the tone of it, I'm sure he would have poo-pooed that notion that a few herrings would have been killed or whatever. But it's a lot worse than that, as you can hear. Michael Brogan, Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You contacted us with a remarkable story of a campaign that a group of sailors in Ireland are involved in for this man, Yuri Dmitriev. Would you tell us who this man is, where he is now, why he is there, and how you got involved?
Well, firstly, Joe, just following on the last speaker that was on with you there, it's very worrying to see what the Russians are doing exercises just over 200 miles off our coast. And I want to congratulate the fishermen from the south and west coast who are going to take their boats out and try and disrupt it. And I can tell you if a lot of sailboats weren't out of the water for the winter, I think they'd be down there with them, and I'm hoping some more might join them. And if we can, we might try and help them out. Getting back to Yuri Alexei Dmitriev. We met him in the city of Petrozavodsk, which most people wouldn't have heard about, on the shores of Lake Onega in 2012. Just as a bit of background to why we were there, I suppose in the millennium, a group of us, including Paddy Barry, Jared Conan, decided we'd have a go at the Northwest Passage, where we're long-term sailors. And we built, Jared built a boat called Northabout in Knock, of all places, under the Basilica.
Right.
And the boat left Ireland in 2000, and we completed the Northwest Passage through very bad ice conditions in 1 year. Like, a long story short, we didn't know how to get the boat back. We had no plans, so we decided to bring it back over the top of Russia. And that took a few years to get permits to do that.
Okay.
And we got a permit to leave in 2004. And it took us 2 seasons to get through the Northeast Passage. We had to overwinter the boat in a place called Khatanga. And the following year, then, in 2004, we went back. And at the time we applied for permission to get the boat back to Ireland after we completed that passage through the White Sea-Baltic Canal built by Stalin in the late 30s, but we didn't get permission, so we had to come back over Norway in the depths of winter, which wasn't too comfortable. Anyway, it was unfinished business, we felt, and we went back, got a permit to go back to do the White Sea-Baltic Canal built by Stalin, as I said, in 2012. And while we were doing that, the first Russian aggression we came across, when we came into the first canal, we were confronted by these guards with Kalashnikovs or whatever guns they were, and they told us no filming, no cameras, no pictures. And we had a cameraman called Gary Finnegan with us, and we wanted to do a documentary on it. But anyway, we overcame that. We got over that. While Lake Onega is part of the system, and this city of Petrozavodsk is on that lake, and Gary had heard of Yuri Dmitriev back in 2012, and he said he'd check him out as part of a documentary he was doing. And by chance, we found Gary by going into the local tourist office, and we arranged, or we found Yuri. And we arranged to meet him in a local cafe in Petrozavodsk, sitting outside. And when we met him, he was a small, frail, bearded man, looking much older than his age of 50s at the time. And the first thing he said to us, "Now, lads, I'll tell you, this is my brother," Cullen was translating. He said, "I want to tell you is that you've been followed by FSB since you arrived in Russia. They've been following me as well, but I'm used to them and they won't do me any harm. And then he said, they won't do you any harm either, but they might try to slow you down." So they did follow us around, and we lost them and this and that. But Yuri took us back to his apartment, which was in the top of a block of flats without an elevator or anything. And he told us about his story. He's a Gulag historian, a researcher of grave sites and that kind of stuff. And he's written books, memorial books, about the people who have been killed in the atrocities of Stalin over the time. And
Michael, we need to put it in context. These canals were, but this one main canal, one of the longest, not the longest in the world, was built under Stalin's regime. It was built in 30 months, I think.
That's correct.
And that was built by slave labor in horrific conditions, with brutal and prehistoric machinery. And they say now it's unknown, but they say that at least 250,000 people, workers, were killed in the construction of the canal, and they're buried along the way. And as I mentioned yesterday, one thing that people might not have known, I came across at the weekend, that the Gulag archives, which were opened by Gorbachev and by Yeltsin, as soon as Putin took over 20 years ago, he shut down the Gulag archives. He doesn't want anyone to know the exact figure of people killed in Stalin's terror. But this man you met, Yuri Dmitriev, he's dedicated his life to remembering these people.
Yes, and he told us stories about the canal, which is over 200 miles, 227 kilometres long, and has got 19 locks. For instance, in one of the locks, the highest lock, the eighth lock, in the year 1932, 10,000 people died alone in the Siberian winter to block up the leaks on the highest lock. He told us stories like, the people had no tools, they had to make their own tools, but he told us stories. If you lost your right hand in an accident on the canal, you were then put back to work with someone who had lost their left hand or left arm. so you could work together. Okay.
So where is Yuri Dmitriev now?
Yuri Dmitriev is in prison. In 2016, he was first arrested under false pretenses, of course, trumped up charges, and he was sentenced to 3 years. Sometime later, the Russian prosecutor increased that in a court to 13. And last December, it was further increased to 15 years. Now, Yuri is going to be 66 next Friday. It's his birthday, and we all wish him a happy birthday. And at 66 years, a frail man in a Russian prison, it's a life sentence. And that's where he is now.
And you, and indeed his supporters believe that he's in prison because of his campaign to expose or reveal the number of people and memorialise the people who died in the construction of that canal. And but they've I presume from reading a lot about it, which I did since we got your contact, that they are trumped. They've trumped up charges against him, and they've alleged. Now, I know it was, I think it was December 7th, 27th, last a few weeks, but today is the 25th. So what? Just a month ago that they extended overnight his sentence by 10 years. They just added 10 years onto
it. That's right, yeah, yeah. Well, see, it's the new regime that's there now under Putin. Putin has changed in the last 30 years since he's been in power, and he's really revising Russian history. He doesn't want anything talked about the dark past of the atrocities of Stalin or whatever, and he only wants to put the emphasis on Russian victories, and he's trying really to rehabilitate Putin.
Okay.
And I think he sees himself as being like Putin, and I think Putin like Stalin.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think what Putin is doing is what he's doing in Russia, he's trying to get the Soviet system back together again. He sees the fall of the Soviet Union as a dark time in Russian history, and he's best to change that.
Say with us, it's Dr. Michael Brogan. Jason Walsh. Jason, you contacted. You're going. Are you mad? You're going to get into a boat and go out to the Russian fleet.
Yeah.
Are you mad?
Thanks, Joe. So thanks, Joe, for having me on your show.
And what's the plan?
I'd say I am a little mad. I'd say I am a little mad, but I'm also angry. I'm also angry that Ireland is allowing this to happen. I'm also angry that Europe is allowing this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
This gentleman, Mr. Putin, needs to be stopped, and if I can do something about it, I will. I'm going to take my yacht. It's a motor yacht. It's a 34-foot motor yacht. It's licensed to carry passengers, and I'm going to be leaving the South Kerry area following that fishing group. I'll be communicating with VHF, and I will be supporting them in a protesting way. I will be making protesting signs up on top of my boat. It will be large for everyone to see. I will do my utmost to try and impede or film or get in the way of what I believe is an encroachment into our sovereign territory. It's against international law, I'd imagine. But more importantly, what it's doing to our ecosystem. I've spent 30 years working around the seas of Ireland and internationally, teaching sailing to children and to encouraging people to utilize our waters in every sense, in canoeing, in swimming, in kayaking, in you name it. I've been doing it for 30 years, water sports. So I want to give something back for all that time I've spent in the water and the joy it's given me. And my little protest here, I want people to join me. I think the previous caller suggested that maybe that, you know, the fact that a lot of sailboats would be out of the water this time of the year is a difficulty, but I think there's a lot of people
and
with motorboats.
But what's the capability of your craft to get to, 200?
My craft has a 300 nautical mile range. I can also carry fuel on board. So I can reach them or I can get close to them. I could lead a convoy.
Yeah, but what would you do?
It's simple protest. It's simple protest.
Should they won't even see you? The size of their craft.
I mean, have you seen pictures of Greenpeace and how they've in the past encroached against? I mean, it doesn't take an awful lot.
Your craft, your yacht is going to be well marked with banners and.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm going off to the South Kerry coast, and I will do my best to liaise with the fishermen who are protesting and join them in unison.
Would you
I invite anybody else to join me there.
But you'll have no protection.
From what, Joe?
From the Russian Navy. Our craft thereof.
Well, if the Russian Navy are going to start,
they could accidentally hit your craft. That's happened before with large craft and very, very small.
My craft is 20 odd knots. My craft is twin engine Yanmar diesel.
Okay.
I'll be able to maneuver out of them.
And have you crew?
And I'm not going to go near them.
Okay.
I will not be going near them. They will see that we are in the area. They will know that we're in VHF earshot of them.
And
they'll know that we're protesting in the area.
And will you?
And
be
that's the point about
but
it.
Will
we
you
won't
be,
necessarily
will,
be.
Will you be trying to disrupt their maneuvers? Their
no,
war games.
That's foolish. That's absolutely ludicrous. This is peaceful protest. This is going out there with a sign saying, sorry, you're not wanted here. Please leave our Irish waters. Russians are not allowed in Irish waters. That's the sort of message
it's an exclusive economic zone, but effectively they're international waters. They can't come into our territorial waters without our permission.
Listen, there has been submarines that have sailed into the city centre of Stockholm. I'm married to a Swedish woman who mm-hmm. is well aware, as if anybody is in Sweden, Finland, and possibly Norway, of Russian aggression and what the Russians get up to in the Baltic and what the Russians get up to on the borders. And they live it's a worrying place to live with Russians on your borders. And I think we don't deserve this. We're a neutral country. They're coming here obviously to prove a point. They're obviously trying to instigate something or to push buttons on the Western way of life. And, you know, I think as a citizen of Ireland, I'm totally abjectly against what they're trying to do. And in my little part is, I have a boat, I have a yacht master, I know what I'm doing.
What's the name on your little boat?
I prefer not to say.
Okay.
She's called My Beauty.
Yeah, but I hope Lucky is in there somewhere as well.
Stay
there, Jason, and Michael Brogan, and other people who want to participate. Joe at RT.ie.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the all-new Kia Sportage, built for endless inspiration. For more, log on to kia.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We're talking about Crimea. His Excellency Yuri Filitov is the Russian ambassador in Ireland. Joe Neal is in Castlebridge in Wexford. Joe, what do you think Ireland should do at this stage, if anything?
Well, it does seem to me that in our position as a neutral state, mm-hmm. there's very little we can do. But it struck me that we could make a gesture by kicking out the Russian ambassador and all his staff.
You mean just expelling them all, closing the embassy?
Yes.
What would that achieve?
Well, it would give a message to mm-hmm. Russia.
It sure would, yeah.
That they don't push smaller states around. No one else is doing anything about this. No one else is able to do anything apart from speaking threatening words about sanctions and so on.
Well, the ambassador, Mr. Filatov, said that no harm whatsoever is intended to infrastructure, marine life, air traffic, maritime traffic. Do you believe him?
Oh, I'm not I wasn't actually talking about that issue, but yes. No harm would be intended. No, of course.
Mm.
He would be a fool if he were to say otherwise.
And do you think the Irish... Well, I'm trying to get the exact quote from one minister this morning saying he didn't think the Russian exercises were as much a threat to marine life or whatever that people have been worried about.
I thought we were going to talk about something else.
Okay.
I think it's very difficult to hear from you, actually,
okay,
on this line.
Sorry, but we try and get a better line. But your position, Joe, was very clear that you believe the only thing we can do to make any impact, even small, on Putin is to shut down the Russian embassy in Dublin.
Yes.
Okay. And you know what will happen? Putin will shut down the Russian embassy or the Irish embassy. And,
yes, and it would be no loss.
Well, we have economic relations with Russia. Companies do business. Butter, meat. I know there's sanctions left, right and centre over the years. But anyway, they're not happy days ahead. Okay, Joe, that's Joe Neal. Let me bring Jason in. Jason is going. Kevin Breen is also in Wexford. Kevin, your point, please. Thanks, Joe. Go ahead,
hello.
Kevin.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I just want to say the way the conversation is going is creating a lot of dissent for the Russian people. I married a Russian girl, and I've been to Russia many, 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 many times. And
right, yeah,
I found
yeah.
the Russian people to be very, very friendly, very loving. They love their families. It's a family orientated when I go over there. When mm-hmm. there's always a celebration of a table, a food put on for you, and vodka and brandy. And they're very friendly. And they don't talk bad about any country.
Okay.
They want to like everybody. What's going on now is Putin's Russia. It's not the people okay. of Russia. They don't want that. They don't want anything to do with that. All they want is to care for their families and care for their children and children going to school and everything like that. They don't want that. They don't want anything to do with that. And they have no control over what Putin does. So maybe in the conversation, you speak about how good the Russian people are, you know, because the way we're speaking, it generates hate and generates ill will.
The people, we're not talking about the Russian people. No, on the other hand...
Well, that's
obvious if you're listening. But the other point is that the Russian people, whether they like it or not, can be conscripted and are being conscripted into an army that may be invading the state next door. Isn't that true? Against their will.
Well, as far as I know, they have to do a year service. Yes.
Yeah, but there are, at any one time, it's something like 400,000 are conscripted every year against their will.
I'd have no idea of them politics. All I'm just saying...
No, but I'm saying, Kevin, they're the people that will suffer if there's a war, as well as the people of Ukraine, obviously.
Absolutely, absolutely. Then the whole point is to tone down things. And I think he's just flisking his muscles. I hope that ends up that there's a buffer zone there and something like North Korea that the two sides can't get to each other and everybody will settle down and stop talking about war. The only people that will suffer, Joe, is the people themselves on either side.
In
Russia.
And
of course, the people that's going to make the money are the people that's selling the arms and the guns.
We also know if there's a protest this coming Saturday on the streets of Moscow against a potential invasion of Ukraine, those protests will be broken up.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, that's the type of man he is. He doesn't want any dissent towards him at all. So that's why when you go over there, people won't talk about it. Yeah, they'll talk privately, let's say, sitting having food and stuff like that. But even on telephones, they won't talk. When we now and again ring Russia, they don't want to talk about that on the phone either.
And Kevin, so I presume the previous contributor who was making the point, Joe Neal, that we should expel the Russian ambassador and his staff.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Maybe if we said we're going to join NATO, given that that seems to be the bugbear for Putin with Ukraine and Sweden and Finland, as we know, we're not in NATO, but they stood on a platform yesterday with Stoltenberg, the General Secretary of NATO. If we said we were joining NATO, would that help?
Well, I think the whole idea is Putin feels that poking a stick at him down there in the eastern part of Ukraine. But the whole idea is to tone it down, pull back from the brink. Because as I said, the only people that's making money will be the manufacturers of arms and stuff like that. So, and the poor people in that region will suffer. So just pull back from the brink and settle down and just relax and everything will be okay. Just pull back. And,
do you think so? Do you think everything will be okay if people just...
Yeah. Tone it down.
Well, I don't know whether you... Again, these essays that Putin wrote just before Christmas there, where he blamed Poland for starting the Second World War.
He's going to say everything to get Europe going. You know,
but that's what I'm saying. You're talking about inflaming things. Yeah. Surely that's inflamed.
But we're big enough to understand. This is going on for years, the Cold War and stuff like that. We're big enough to understand that, not to generate this hate like what happened in 1939. We don't need that anymore. We don't need something like that anymore. So we're big enough to understand. We know how to tone things down. Like, we have evolved, you know.
Who do you mean by we?
The human race. I'm sure we have evolved rather than generate this hate again. And there's a lot of it out there. You know, so just tone it down. And particularly the governments, you know, around the world, you know.
Okay, Kevin. Thanks indeed. That's Kevin Breen of Wexford. Back after this break.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Discover our 2-to-1 offers at your local Kia dealer. For more, log on to kia.com.
Joe Duffy! Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And on yesterday's programme, we were contacted by Olga, who's about an hour and a half from Donetsk, which is in eastern Ukraine. And as you heard yesterday, and people would have known, many, I think, that Donetsk is basically under the control of Russia, Russian-backed rebels. And she's about an hour and a half from there, and she's very worried. She can hear gunfire. But I think that thing struck most people about Olga yesterday. She was very, very calm about the prospect. It looked like us looking from further a field were much more upset. And indeed, Thomas Bourne, the junior minister for EU affairs, who's been at a number of meetings recently, said on Clare this morning that the war is imminent. War is imminent in that part of the world. Now, Terry has contacted us. You're married to a new Ukrainian woman. Terry, what do you think will happen if Russia invades Ukraine?
Well, I have been going to Ukraine for the last 18 summers, I'd say.
Okay, I'm going to try and get him. Terry, sorry, nothing to do with you. I just have to get a better line. Okay, Billy, you're saying... No, sorry, Simon is there and then Pauline. Okay, Simon, your partner is Russian.
She is, Joe. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
Joe, I'm just listening to all the talk about Russia and whatever invading the last few days. I can't get over the hypocrisy of the so-called West, who have broke every treaty with Russia since NATO was formed. But yes, everything is Russian's fault all the time. And I'm not saying this because I'm going out with a Russian or anything. Mm-hmm. I've always thought like this. Yeah.
So you're saying the Russians haven't broken any treaty? The Russians in 1994, along with the EU and the US, they all they signed an agreement saying because Ukraine got rid of their nuclear weapons, that they would be protectors of the Ukraine. And then Putin invaded and took the Crimea, and now he's openly talking about invading Ukraine.
Yeah, Joe. I'm not an expert. I'm a normal punter. It's just from my observations and being in Russia several times.
Okay. Simon, what do you think the Irish people should? What do you think? Sorry, Ireland should do. You might have heard one man say get rid of, expel the ambassador. Another man saying he's getting in his yacht, called Lucky Beauty, I think, and he's heading off on Sunday out to the Russian fleet. What do you think we can do, if anything?
I don't think there's anything we can do. They're not breaking any laws. Like, there's countries all over the world in the same standing as Russia, like the so-called powerful countries that test weapons in the seas all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not doing it in our seas. They're doing it off our seas. Yeah, if it was the Americans, if it was the French or the English or anyone testing missiles in the sea, I'd be against it. But there's not a whole lot we can do about it.
And what do you
I wouldn't go expelling any ambassadors or anything.
And what do you think of Jason's protest?
With the boat?
Yeah.
Yes, if he wants to do it, I'm sure he wants to do it. I think he'd be better off protesting against our giant fishing vessels pillaging the seas off Africa and stuff rather than, fish will be harmed in the process, but not as many that are taken every day from the coast of Africa and stuff by Irish fishing fleets. Mm.
So you think his protest is misguided, to say, or going in the wrong direction, to say the least?
Yeah, I genuinely do, yeah.
Okay. Pauline Daly's on the line. Pauline, what do you think of Jason's protest?
Hello, Joe. I actually think fair play to him, because I know that the Russians are not breaking any international law and they can stay there if they want to. But as a people, I think we need to stand up, because the government can't do anything. But I think to go out there and just to show the world maybe that the people here don't agree with it, even though the government can't stop them, maybe we should stand up, because this is not right. You know, what's going on in the Ukraine is not right. And it's coming here now, it's just like bullies. They're just bullying. And as a woman, and I'm 71, I think he's doing something. That man is right. He's going out to do something to show that Ireland, you know, as a people, we don't want them here. Not as their people, but what they're doing, the government are doing there. And as I said, you know, if I lived in Cork and I was going, I'd go with him.
Would you?
And I hope people will follow them. I hope they will follow them out.
And what about, you know, Simon's point? He should be going in the direction and talking about protesting about the
pillaging. Well, there is all those other things to protest against. But, I mean, this is happening here in our own country. You know, this is happening here. And we've no other way. There's no other way of protesting. And, you know, through the years, like with different things, I know when Vietnam was going on in America, I would send letters and do things like that. All those things that came along, anything that I could do, you know, to state my own opinion about things. And this is what I feel with that man, that something should be done there.
And Pauline, in your ordinary daily conversation, are people talking about, well, they are listening to our programme, we're inundated with God, but are people talking about Ukraine? Are people worried?
I think they are, you know. I as I said, because of COVID, I haven't been out mixing an awful lot, but our own family, we're talking about it here, and we don't agree with it. I mean, it must be an awful thing to be in your country there, and all this happening along your borders, and as you said, that lady could hear the gunfire and everything.
Let me go back to Terry Berry. Stay there, Pauline. Terry, you're as you say, you've been in Ukraine loads of times, beautiful country by all accounts, and you're married to a Ukrainian woman. What do you think? Sorry, you were, sir. What do you think? What do you think the Ukrainian people would do, the citizens, if they were Russia invaded?
Okay, well, I have a good grasp of the Ukrainian psyche, if you like, you know.
Okay.
And actually, one of the reasons why I like Ukraine so much, I like the people, and the people are not unlike Irish people. You know, they have a history of being bullied.
Yeah. Okay.
By Russia.
By a near neighbor that's significantly more powerful. Yeah, take your point.
Yes, and they had a famine in 1921. 3.7 million people died. I have friends in Kyiv, Odessa, and in Nikolaev, which is in the southwest of the country. When I speak to them, they think that this won't happen.
Okay, absolutely, hopefully.
We hope it won't happen. And I'm glad to see Irish people standing up as well for the Ukrainians, you know. I was in Kyiv for the Orange Revolution. You might remember that.
Yeah.
And I saw the streets of Kyiv, Krasnaya, which is the main street in Kyiv.
And then the Russian-backed president, he fled, and he was given...
Well, before that, Joe, they elected a man called Viktor Yushchenko. And Yushchenko was poisoned by the Russians.
Yeah.
And the next fellow was in was Yanukovych.
Yeah, and he's in exile now.
And I was in what they call the Maidan. I saw Maidan after, about 6 months after the 130 people were killed on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was you can probably even today you can see the shrines of all those people that were shot by the they said unidentified police, but that was 130 people died and 30 police officers.
Well, going back to those images in Kyiv at the time of the Orange Revolution, and the, as we know, the Prime Minister fled, and he is he's currently being looked after by Putin. What do you think the Ukrainian people would do? Surely they all wouldn't take up arms.
Well, John, they're very, very patriotic people, very proud people. You know, I mean, when I went there first, it was mostly Russian was spoken. But over the years, I speak Russian myself, by the way, and, and over the years, the Ukrainian language is becoming stronger and stronger. They're very, very patriotic people.
Okay.
If you look at their history with 130 people, that's their bloody Sunday, if you like. You know? And I would have no doubt that they would take up arms. And it's a great shame to see.
Terrible if it has happened. But tell me, Terry, just brief. Are guns allowed in Ukraine? You know, they're totally banned here, except for hunting or whatever.
No, not at all. Okay. Well, Ukraine is a very civilized country.
Yeah, and they're the ones who gave up nuclear weapons as well, even though they're surrounded by nuclear weapons. Okay, stay with us, Terry. Joe at RT.ie.
Joe!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Chris is on the line. Chris, your point, please.
Hi, Joe, you know, I used to work with this fella, and every day we went to him when we were having our tea, he'd open the newspaper and read out, De Valera threatens Russia. It was a joke. But you have to ask yourself, why have the Germans put a ban on selling arms to the Ukraine, number one? And why has the head of the naval forces and naval intelligence Germany resigned? You know, now, I wouldn't defend Putin, and like a lot of stuff he does is indefensible. But you do have to understand the Russian psyche. You have to remember, within living folk memory, I know I lost a grandfather in the First World War. This was the Second World War. Russia lost 25 million people to an attack from the West. Remember Gustavus Adolphus?
The attack was coming from Germany, not from the West. Geographically, the West, but not the West.
Not the West
as we know it. The Allies, the Allies were England, the States, France, and Russia. They were on the one side. But anyway,
But just to make the point that we do have to make an attempt to understand why there's 100,000 Russian soldiers on the borders of Ukraine. You know, in 2014, as that man was articulating earlier on, there was a coup d'état. It was engineered basically by European powers, and the leadership fled to Moscow. Now, they weren't a pretty sight of a government either, but they weren't a legal government, and that's what kind of freaked out Putin. And after the Soviet Union fell, the West really disrespected the Soviet Union and, you know, did serious economic damage to it. Also, people forget get the next point? The EU, you know, Ukraine wants to join the EU. The EU and its values are a present danger to the culture and, you know, the religious beliefs of spiritual Russia. And it was spiritual Russia that defended or defeated the Nazis. It wasn't that nasty person, Stalin. So there's a cultural clash as well, you know. And they don't, the Russians won't never accept things like that deconstructed, you know, the Christian countries in Europe. I reckon there's four Christian countries left in Europe. One is the Vatican City, two is Hungary, three is Poland, and four is Russia. And you don't underestimate that cultural clash as well, you know, because the Russian culture and religious belief, they're Christians, they really are, you know, adverse to the values of the European Union. People
yeah, but,
that as well.
Yeah, but, well, the people of Ukraine, most recent opinion polled, I think 70% of them want to join the EU. And you say when Moscow fell, when the wall fell and the USSR collapsed, that it was the West jumped in and kicked them while they were down. It was Estonia, Riga, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Hungary, all these former satellites that were under the jackboot of the USSR. They're the ones that led. They're the ones that wanted to join NATO. They're the ones that wanted to join the, I mean, those people.
Yes, and Russia allowed them to do that.
Well, Russia, Russia had no hand actor part. They were individual nations. What do you mean Russia allowed them to join it? That's like saying that Boris Johnson is allowing Ireland to stay in the EU. We're sovereign people. All those countries were sovereign people taken over by communists by force at the end, and I know there were circumstances at the end of the Second World War.
They couldn't
wait to get out.
25 million deaths.
I know, it's horrific, and Nazism was horrific, and fascism is horrific, and dictatorship is horrific.
Yes, yes.
But those people couldn't wait to get out from under the jackboot of Moscow.
Well, my case here is simple. It's just that we should make some attempt to understand the people of Russia.
Well, you see, it's not the people of Russia that are doing this. It's the leaders of Russia. Putin has been in power. This is the man who puts opponents in prison. This is a man who arrests protesters. This is a man who kills journalists. This is a man, anyway.
All of the living people that had relatives lost in that, and try to understand them. I'm not defending Putin or his methods or his version of Christianity or politics, but I think we do have to make a little effort to understand where they're coming from.
But I think the point made earlier by one of our callers whose partner lived in Russia, saying that the Russian people are afraid to protest. They're afraid to protest. And we don't have a sense that the Russian people want to invade Ukraine, and we don't have a sense otherwise because they're afraid to go out onto the streets. Anyway, Billy, conversation continuing tomorrow.
Yes.
1:45, go to Mila Mahagud. Today's producer was Grace Waller, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Discover our 2-to-1 offers at your local Kia dealer. For more, log on to kia.com.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.